Okay. Good morning. This is Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. We are so pleased to have in our studio today on the phone Senator Jim Whalen from the state of New Jersey. Senator Whalen, thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having us.
As you know, we're doing a radio documentary on Atlantic City. And I think one of the best authorities in Atlantic City would be you because you served as mayor for four terms. Can you give our listening audience just a little bit overview of your background?
Well, actually, it was three terms, to be precise. But prior to that, I did two terms on city council. In my day job, my other career, of course, mayor of Atlantic City is full-time, but while I was on council and even now as a member of the Senate, I'm a school teacher in Atlantic City. I have a wonderful position there because it's fourth and fifth grade kids and citywide that I teach to swim. My background personally is I was a competitive swimmer and coach in my younger days and had the opportunity to teach swimming when they build an elementary school in your old neighborhood, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
The West Side Complex.
Yes.
Called the Martin Luther King Complex. And as that they put a pool in there. I was, at that point, I was coaching a Temple University swim team.
Oh.
But my wife, who's from Atlantic City, I had spent my summers in Atlantic City lifeguarding and so on from the time I was a baby. But we decided we really wanted to be in Atlantic City, so we moved to Atlantic City and school teacher, got into politics, two terms on council, three terms as mayor, went back to teaching when I left the mayor's office, and then joined the state legislature in 2006. The election was 2005, I got sworn in 2006. So it's a little bit of the background, and Atlantic City is a very interesting place. I think there's two general comments that I would make, and then we can get into some specifics. The first is, we're the smallest big city in the country. By most measures, Atlantic City is a big city. It's a big city in terms of its diversity. It's a big city in terms of, let's say, aging infrastructure. A big city in terms of its economic impact, even by name recognition. It's a big city, but fundamentally, it's a small town. Our population is less than 40,000, when you rank New Jersey's more populous cities, we're not even in six figures, where we're, that presents interesting challenges and interesting opportunities. I think the opportunities come from the fact that with a city this size, you can get your arms around things. If you're in New York City or Philadelphia, where I grew up going to school and kind of Temple and so on, You can fix maybe the problems of one neighborhood, or to put it into urban terms, let's say one police precinct. You can concentrate on that and drive the crime out of one particular precinct. But, it goes to the next precincts. It goes to the surrounding precincts. Whereas in Atlantic City, we're small enough that, again, you can get your arms around it by most big city standards. We're not even a full precinct. Philadelphia's typical precinct would be a population of around 70 to 80,000. So it's something you can get your arms around, whether it's policing problems or school problems or other issues like that. One of the things that I did as mayor, for example, and your sister was somewhat involved in this, your sister was our director of Health and Human Services, we set up a program called Youth Build, where we identify at-risk young people. Typically, they may be a high school dropout. They may have had some minor skirmishes with law enforcement, nothing major. And we put them into a program where they got some training. And, in our case, it not only helped. We might have 20 to 30 people at a time in a class like that. It not only helped them get the job training and the life skills they need to be successful in the workforce, but in a city the size of Atlantic City, if you can turn out two or three of those classes in a year, it actually starts to impact your unemployment rate because we're so small. Again, if you did that in Philadelphia or New York, okay, they have youth build programs in those cities, at least they did back then, you're impacting positively the lives of the people who you are in the program, but you're not really impacting your unemployment rate because you have a city of million-plus people, or in the case of New York, millions of people. Again, it's something you can get your arms around, which is a good thing.
And if you help the unemployment rate, of course you're decreasing the crime rate.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, these are potential people who would be part of those crime stats, if not for, hey, here's a program, here's an opportunity to get some job skills and get into a, really concentrate on construction trades, perhaps get into a union or get into the construction field. And we had some success stories. We didn't bat 1,000, quite honestly. But so again, you're impacting positively both your unemployment rate and your crime rate. So that's kind of the opportunity. The challenge is, and the challenge in part comes from the second generalization I would make about Atlantic City. And some people get annoyed at me when I say this. I don't know how you will feel as a native son, but. Atlantic City is at heart a carnival town. And the carnival used to come to a town and spend a week, right, and then move to the next town and spend a week and move to the next town and spend a week. And people would go to the carnival and they kind of knew they were going to be conned a little bit, that maybe not, you know, they'd spend $3 to win a $1 Cupid doll or whatever the game was. But, you know, so it goes. It was there for a week, and it was some fun and excitement, and then it moved on. Atlantic City was a different model. We were here, and people came for a week and stayed, and then they left and went home to upstate New Jersey or Pennsylvania or somewhere generally in the mid-Atlantic region. We exaggerated when we said we were the world's playground, but we certainly were the mid-Atlantic playground for New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania and Delaware and even parts of Maryland down to Washington. But the people would come for a week and leave, and then the next week a different group of people would come on vacation and so on. And one of the after effects of that is that there's a certain ethic, frankly, that is in the town that, is a carnival ethic. And, you know, we have seen that, unfortunately, show itself through a number of scandals, both, quite frankly, before I was mayor and after I was mayor. I was proud of the fact that through the 12 years that we were there, that we didn't have that issue at a high level in government.
And that's a very key issue, Senator Whalen. I talked about this in one of my interviews with one of my other guests, and I was hoping that my statistic was correct. But during your tenure, no one in your administration was indicted, charged, or went to jail, which is a really credit to you and the team that you put together.
Well, and even more than that, one of the things that we did, because we knew going in that we had some problem areas. The paint and sign shop, for example, where literally the employees there would take the city truck and the city paint and go out and paint private malls. The same thing with the tow lot, where we had concerns there, where the numbers didn't add up. And we were fairly aggressive about cleaning those problems up and making sure that we used the Atlantic City Police Department to do it. We were tired of having state police or federal law enforcement come in, and we want to show that these were matters that that could be done, as I say, internally, and we were aggressive with that. I was fortunate that we did have a good team of people. One of the interesting things, and this goes back to what we were talking about, when we had a problem in code enforcement, and literally one of the inspectors who was jammed up in this problem said to the investigators, "But we've always done it this way." Mm-hmm. As if, well, you know, of course this is how we do it. We don't go out and inspect the buildings. We just sell the certificate of occupancy across the desk, you know, and we've always done it this way.
Mm-hmm.
As if that's a defense, and I think that goes back to that carnival mentality that, everybody's kind of in a little bit on the con, and, again, that's part of the charm of Atlantic City, quite honestly, but also is part of the challenge.
You know, I have never heard that phrase before, but I would have to agree with you in regards to the carnival ethic. I grew up as you know, and I worked at the Million Dollar Pier. So I'm very familiar with folks coming in for a week or a weekend, and they would play their different games. And, you know, as you said, you know, spend $5 to win a $1 prize or have some very high priced ice cream. But that was the allure of Atlantic City. But as Atlantic City would like to tout itself as the world's playground, there's serious issues with the crime. And this youth build program that you spoke about, is that youth build program, is that still in practice in Atlantic City?
No, unfortunately, after I left the mayor's office, it was shut down. There are some other programs. One is a mentoring program, again, that your sister as Director of Health and Human Services started when I was mayor, that takes a little younger population. The Youth Build Program targeted people 18 to 25, so sort of a post-high school population. And typically, as I say, they had dropped out. This is a more adolescent program that takes young African-American population, maybe 13 to 15, 16, called mm-hmm. Rites of Passage.
Yes.
And they get mentored, and they get some doses of reality. I mean, one of the realities of dealing with that population is that you really have to keep it real, to use a cliche, but you can't sugarcoat it, and you got to go in and say, look, if you make some good decisions and some right decisions, here's a path that will open up to you. But if you make some wrong decisions in terms of who your friends are and what you do and cutting school and sliding that way, here is the path that's going to open to you in terms of getting into trouble and consigning yourself to low-end type jobs if you drop out of high school, or worse if you fall into criminal activity and so on. So I think that's been a successful program that is still going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's one of the stubborn realities of Atlantic City, and one of the things that we learned perhaps first, because when casinos came in, the referendum passed in 76 and the first casino opened in 78, one of the things that we learned was that the help wanted sign in and of itself is not the cure for hardcore unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
Hardcore unemployment is as much a social problem as it is an economic problem.
Mm-hmm.
We had jobs aplenty, but we still had a very stubborn unemployment rate. And in part, it was the life skills, if you will, that people who never had steady work. You know, like you say, you worked $1 million pier in the summertime, no matter how good a job you did, and you did it as a student, but there were some adults who
worked there. Oh, there were a lot of adults. I was fortunate. I was one of the few students, yes.
No matter how good a job you did, $1 million pier was shutting down in September.
Right.
Conversely, no matter how bad a job you did, they needed you in the summer, so the odds are you got to screw up pretty bad to get fired.
Right, right.
So that is not conducive to creating a work ethic and a lifestyle that is going to give you successful employment. So, again, we learned that hardcore unemployment is as much a social problem as it is an economic problem, and through programs like Youth Build, and now I know, like, for example, Borgata had a successful outreach into the Atlantic City community when they opened. That's the last casino that opened. And Revel's doing the same thing. I attended several of the job seminars that Revel did, and they did something very interesting. Very interesting. And you know the Atlantic City community as well as I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They started, if the meeting was called for 7 o'clock, they started on the dot at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people straggling in. And, you know, if you straggled in, it was pretty obvious you were late.
Right.
And they weren't given 5 or 10 minutes for people to kibitz and the way a lot of times, you know, meetings will go to. And I go to meetings for a living to an extent.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know, and okay, well, 7 o'clock, you know, 7 o'clock really means 7:15. No, no, no. This is a job situation. 7 o'clock means 7 o'clock. Bang, 7 o'clock, we're starting. I was there.
Wow.
Some people were shocked.
Uh-huh.
They were like, oh, we're starting on time. And one of the things they had said in their flyer is a one-hour meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Said, we want to start at 7. We want to get you home by 8 o'clock. You came here, give us an hour. We're going to tell you what you need to do to get you, to get prepared to be an employee of Rebel. One of the things we do, we start on time, we end on time.
Now,
so if you were 5 minutes late or 10 minutes late, the point was made. You know, this is professionalism, be on time.
Now, Pastor Days, I had him on the program, and he said one of his concerns is that a lot of the folks, the African-Americans in Atlantic City, one of the two issues that they struggle with is, one, some of them have a criminal record, whether it's a minor offense. They have a criminal record which does not allow them to work in a casino. And unfortunately, some of them have drug issues. And he felt that the outreach from the casinos is nice, but they really need to address the laws in regards to how people can, what are the laws that require people to be employed by the casino. What is your viewpoint in regards to working with individuals who have served their time, they've made their debt to society, but they have this issue of having a criminal offense, whether it's marijuana possession or the intent to distribute or whatever it is, but now they're really trying, they want to do the right thing. How can the laws address that situation so that those who want to be employed and are employable would have the opportunity to be employed?
Well, hopefully I think we have addressed the one piece of it, the casino piece, where a record does not bar you from casino employment other than jobs that directly deal with the money.
Mm-hmm.
So you can work and you can work off the casino floor in jobs even that do deal with the money. You can be a waiter, you can be a bartender, you can be a housekeeper, you can be a chef, valet parker, up and down the line. You can't be a dealer, let's say, or work the change in the casino itself,
right?
Or work the count room or so on. So, and that rule was modified to address, in part, the problem you just mentioned, that Reverend Days talked about. The other part of this, I think we really need to, and I get, again, this is an issue where I wind up getting myself in a little bit of trouble with some people, but I really think we need to revisit our drug laws and our expungement policies and so on and so forth. I see too often, quite frankly, I mean, it's easier to get an expungement for a drunk driving charge than it is for a marijuana charge or a drug charge. Now, you know, if you do the statistical analysis, the demographic analysis of that, more often than not, I mean, the drunk driving tends to be more of a white middle-class crime, and the drug crimes tend to be more in the African-American community. Why aren't they being treated equally?
Right.
And again, we've done some things. Assemblywoman Bonnie Watson-Coleman has been in the forefront of that, but I think we need to, we really need to, you know, look at that entire thing. I mean, first off, the war on drugs, which goes back to, you know, the 60s when I was in high school and college and so on, you know, we haven't been real successful. We spend a lot of money, and I'm not advocating legalization of drugs, but I do think we ought to decriminalize some of this. Our prison population is overflowing with nonviolent drug offenders. It just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me, so I think we really need to revisit that whole policy of what we're doing with drug offenders and how we treat them both up front and how we treat them throughout the process. It doesn't make sense to lock people up, throw them in jail, give them a long sentence, have them come out and not be able to get an expungement, not be able to get decent employment. So,
right.
But I mean, I think, you know, we've taken some very small steps in the right direction with drug court and things like that. But I think we need to expand those type of programs. And I think that's really a national issue. And, you know, when we will get there or how long it will take us to get there, if we ever do get there. But back to the first point, New Jersey has really relaxed its standard with regard to working in the casino hotel for for people with records. We also have some other employers, and I will tell you a quick story. Again, you're familiar with Atlantic City, but we had a laundry in town, a commercial laundry, not one that you mom and pop run into. They do the cleaning of towels and sheets,
right,
for most of the casinos. AC Linen is the name of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking to relocate, and we were working it out. We had a site and so on. And we met with, it happened to be right across the street from the church, and we met with the pastor of the church. And the owner of the laundry said to the pastor, a woman named Reverend Fonville, said, "Reverend, I will give you," I was the mayor at the time, "I will give you the same deal I give the mayor." Reverend Fonville said, "Well, what's that?" He said, "I will hire anybody you send to me. So I may not hire them right away, but I will hire them. He said, we ramp up in the spring. We're still a little bit seasonal. He said, so if they come in November, December, I may tell them to come back in March, April, but I will hire them." He said, "As long as I have the right to fire them."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And she looked at me, and I said, "Absolutely." I said, "We've sent some people over there who have done quite well, and some of them are still there. This is, 10, 12 years they've been promoted, and they started out pushing a big bin around the floor, and they moved up, and now they're driving the truck and making more money, or a supervisor, and so on. Conversely, and the owner there likes to tell the story, he literally fired someone the first morning they were working.
Wow.
that we sent over. And he likes to kid me about that. There is, however, one condition that he has. He says, "I have one question I asked during the interview." He says, "Were you in prison for murdering your last boss?" If they ever say yes to that, I'm not hiring him. But other than that, and he's been very good to his word. So I think my point of that is, yes, we want the casinos to open up, but we also have other employers that we should look to. And in fact, the most recent hire that we had over there was someone who was on a work release program. And
mm-hmm.
I got a call
mm-hmm.
from the family and said, if we can get him a job, so-and-so can get out of prison.
Right.
We got him a job and got him out of prison. So there are employers in the community who, well, not enough, unfortunately, but there are some who are willing to step in and help with this problem.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we're here with New Jersey State Senator Jim Whalen talking about Miss America, Where Are You? Atlantic City, the radio documentary that we're doing here in WSOU. Senator Whalen, about crime, it's interesting. I always like to ask the guests in this series this question. Does Atlantic City have a crime problem?
Like every city in America, and certainly every urban community, we have a crime problem. Unfortunately, it is blown out of proportion, I think because of two factors. One is the crime stats are always based on your permanent population. So if you have a permanent population of slightly under 40,000, and you have a visitor population in terms of workers and tourists and people who are visiting the casinos, that on average makes your population over 100,000, and on summer days or busy holiday weekends can bring your population up to 250,000 or more, it's very hard to get an accurate picture of what is, in fact, the actual crime. So, even if it's more of a perception problem, where you say, well, the crime rate, and we've looked at these figures over the years, the crime rate on a town of a population per 110 or 120, whatever the average is, when you take in the load, really is not that significant. That almost doesn't matter, because if the perception is that it's unsafe, then that's going to keep visitors away, and that's going to affect the economy and the jobs and so on. So,
but what about,
we have a crime problem, but more significantly, we have a public relations problem that crime is perceived to be worse than it actually is.
Now, from Pastor Day's perspective, from his perspective, he would say that crime is really bad, as there's 27 unsolved murders in Atlantic City.
We have had a recent over the last year. I think this calendar year there are 13 of those murders.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are unfortunately gang and violence related. That's why I said we do have as does America, as does urban America in particular. We do have, you know, the same problems that that plague other urban centers. But I don't think it's significantly worse, and I would suggest that it's actually statistically a little better. Now, that doesn't help the victim of the crime, and it doesn't help the perception if, in fact, as we recently had a carjacking, you know, it's not consolation to the people that, well, this was committed by people from Camden who came down to Atlantic City to steal a car, and, you know, they wound up stealing a car and shooting the driver and killing him. Doesn't matter. It happened in Atlantic City, so the stain is on us. I mean, I think that again, if you this is one of those problems where the solution is a multi-pronged attack. You know, conservatives like to say we need more cops, we need tougher sentences, so on and so forth. I'm with you on the more cops. I'm not necessarily with you with tougher sentences because I don't notice a shortage of people taking the place of the people we lock up.
Right.
The visibility of police is, you know, I think a deterrent. Mm-hmm. But also we need other things as well. We need social programs like a youth build or like rites of passage. Mm-hmm. We need to support those kinds of programs. We need to make sure that there are, in fact, jobs. You know, if we have a youth build program and there's no jobs at the end of the program, we're just kidding these young people.
Right, right.
Okay, you go through 12 weeks of training, and at the end, you know, you get a certificate. No, go through 12 weeks training, and in you get a job. It makes a huge difference. So I think that you need to attack this on multiple levels. And, of course, part of it is, unfortunately, getting young people into a different mindset of what should be acceptable behavior. And, again, that's a national problem. I mean, the Crips and the Bloods are national gangs at this point.
Yeah. Senator Whalen, we're almost out of time. We have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to leave that time for you to share with us your thoughts on what do you think is the solution to solving the crime issue in Atlantic City?
Well, I think a big piece of it is higher police visibility. I'm also an advocate. We had limited success with this. We had a little bit of success with this, but I got people in from the PBA upset with me when I said this. But you know, I teach in Atlantic City. If I go to my former students, who are now young men and women, but more men, let's say, and say, "Hey, here's job opportunities for you. You know, you're a squared away guy. You went to Atlantic High. You graduated. You're on a football team or basketball team or whatever. You stayed out of trouble. Here's two job applications, one for the fire department, one for the police department. The odds are that African American kid's taking the fire department and not taking the police department." That gap is something that we need to address. Now, that's not, you know, that's an exaggeration to make the point. And we do have, you know, many fine African American police officers in Atlantic City, and there are efforts to recruit, but we need to intensify those and find ways to get more police from the African American community, and again, this is a national issue, so that we don't have that the gap between police and the street culture is there regardless of what the cop is. But I think it's intensified when you might have a situation and you have three or four squad cars roll up, and you got a bunch of white guys for you, to be quite blunt.
Right.
So I think that's something that's one small piece. There is no one single answer. I mean, if we had all black cops tomorrow in Atlantic City, that wouldn't solve the crime problem.
Right.